amethyst emitted a bell-like tone as it broke, and when the shards struck the ground, they tinkled like ice. Aragorn kept to the right of the corridor, making sure not to hit the blood-streaked spikes that held up Weirdon's body. Again and again he swung, hacking his way through the glittering thicket. With every blow he sent pieces of amethyst flying through the air. One sliced his left cheek and he winced, surprised and concerned that his wards had failed. The jagged remnants of the broken spikes forced him to move carefully. The stumps below could easily pierce his boots, while the ones above threatened to cut him about the head and neck. Still, he managed to navigate to the far side of the thicket with only a small gash on his right calf, which stung whenever he put his weight on the leg. The black-clad warriors nearly caught up with him as he helped Arya past the last few rows of spikes. Once she was free, they rushed through the opening and into the purplish light, Aragorn with every intention of then turning around and confronting their attackers head-on and killing every last one of them in retaliation for Weirdon's death. On the other side of the opening was a dark, heavily built chamber that reminded Aragorn of the caves under Tronchin. A huge, circular pattern of inlaid stone, marble and chalcedony and polished hematite occupied the center of the floor. Around the edge of the patterned disc stood rough, fist-sized chunks of amethyst set within silver collars. Each piece of the purple rock glowed softly, the source of the light they had seen from the corridor. Across the disc, against the far wall, was a large black altar draped with a gold and crimson cloth. Pillars and candelabra flanked the altar, with a closed door on each side. All this Aragorn saw as he barreled into the room, in the brief instant before he realized that his momentum was going to carry him through the ring of amethysts and onto the disc. He tried to stop himself, tried to turn aside, but he was moving too fast. Desperate, he did the one thing he could. He jumped toward the altar, hoping he could clear the disc in a single bound. As he sailed over the nearest of the amethyst stones, his last feeling was regret, and his last thought was of Saphira. To feed a god. The first thing Aragorn noticed was the difference in the colors. The stone blocks in the ceiling appeared richer than before. Details that had been obscure now seemed sharp and vivid, while others that had been prominent were subdued. Below him, the sumptuous nature of the patterned disc was even more apparent. It took him a moment to understand the reason for the change. Arya's red weirlight no longer illuminated the chamber. Instead, what light there was came from the muted glow of the crystals and the lit candles in the candelabra. Only then did he realize that something was crammed into his mouth, stretching his jaw painfully wide, and that he was hanging by his wrists from a chain mounted in the ceiling. He tried to move and found that his ankles were shackled and secured to a metal loop in the floor. As he twisted in place, he saw Arya next to him, trussed and suspended in the same manner. Like him, she was gagged with a ball of cloth in her mouth, and a rag tied around her head to hold it in place. She was already awake and watching him, and he saw she was relieved at his return to consciousness. "Why hasn't she escaped already?" he wondered. Then, what happened? His thoughts felt thick and slow, as if he were drunk with exhaustion. He looked down and saw that he had been stripped of his weapons and armor. He was clad only in his leggings. The belt of Beloth the Wise was gone, as was the necklace the dwarves had given him that prevented anyone from scrying him. Looking up, he saw that the elf ring Arran was missing from his hand. A touch of panic gripped him. Then he reassured himself with the knowledge that he was not helpless, not so long as he could work magic. Because of the cloth in his mouth, he would have to cast a spell without uttering it aloud, which was somewhat more dangerous than the normal method, for if his thoughts strayed during the process, he might accidentally select the wrong words, but not so dangerous as casting a spell without any use of the ancient language at all, which was perilous indeed. In any event, it would take only a small amount of energy for him to free himself, and he was confident he could do it without too much trouble. He closed his eyes and gathered his resources in preparation. As he did, he heard Arya rattling her chain and making muffled noises. Glancing over, he saw her shaking her head at him. He raised his eyebrows in a wordless inquiry. "What is it?" But she was unable to do anything more than grunt and continue to shake her head. Frustrated, Aragorn cautiously pushed out his mind toward her, alert for the slightest hint of intrusion from anyone else. But to his alarm, he felt only a soft, indistinct pressure surrounding him, as if bales of wool were packed around his mind. Panic began to well up inside of him again, despite his efforts to control it. He was not drugged, of that he was sure. But he did not know what else besides a drug could prevent him from touching Arya's mind. If it was magic, it was magic unlike any he was familiar with. He and Arya stared at each other for a moment. Then a stir of motion drew Aragorn's eye upward, and he saw lines of blood running down her forearms, from where the manacles around her wrists had scraped away the skin. Rage engulfed him. He grabbed the chain above him and yanked on it as hard as he could. The links held, but he refused to give up. In a frenzy of anger, he pulled on it again and again, without regard for the harm he was causing himself. At last he stopped and hung limply, while hot blood dripped from his wrists onto the back of his neck and shoulders. Determined to escape, he delved into the flow of energy within his body, and directing the spell at his shackles, he mentally shouted, "Kverst marmer du hilders edtha, mar frema ne thon eka threya." He screamed into his gag as every nerve in his body seared with pain. Unable to maintain his concentration, he lost his grip on the spell, and the enchantment ended. The pain vanished at once, but it left him devoid of breath, with his heart pounding as heavily as if he had just jumped off a cliff. The experience was similar to the seizures he had suffered before the dragons healed a scar on his back during the Agaiti Blodron. As he slowly recovered, he saw Arya gazing at him with a concerned expression. She must have tried a spell herself. Then, how could this have happened? The two of them, bound and helpless, weird and dead, the herbalist captured or slain, and Solombum most likely lying hurt somewhere in the underground maze, if the black-clad warriors had not already killed the Weircat. Aragorn could not understand it. He, Arya, Wirden, and Angela had been as capable and dangerous a group as any in Alagazia. And yet they had failed, and he and Arya were at the mercy of their enemies. "If we can't escape..." He shied away from the thought. It did not bear dwelling on. More than anything, he wished he could contact Saphira, if only to be assured that she was still safe and to take comfort in her companionship. Though Arya was with him, he felt incredibly alone, and that unnerved him most of all. Despite the agony in his wrists, he resumed pulling on the chain, convinced that if he just kept at it long enough, he could work it loose from the ceiling. He tried twisting it, thinking it would be easier to break that way, but the fetters around his ankles kept him from turning very far to either side. The sores on his wrist eventually forced him to stop. They burned like fire, and he was afraid he might end up cutting into muscle if he continued. Also, he worried he might lose too much blood, as the sores were already bleeding heavily, and he did not know how long he and Arya would have to hang there waiting. It was impossible to tell what time it was, but he guessed that they had been captives for only a few hours at the most, given that he did not feel the need to eat, drink, or relieve himself. That would change, though, and then their discomfort would only increase. The pain in Aragorn's wrists made every minute seem unbearably long. Occasionally, he and Arya would stare at each other and try to communicate, but their efforts always failed. Twice, his sores crusted over enough that he risked yanking on the chain again, but to no avail. For the most part, he and Arya endured. Then, when Aragorn had begun to wonder if anyone was ever going to come, he heard the clang of iron bells from somewhere in the tunnels and passageways, and the doors on either side of the black altar swung open on silent hinges. Aragorn's muscles tensed in anticipation. He fixed his eyes on the openings, as did Arya. A seemingly endless minute passed. With a brash, jarring toll, the bells sounded again, filling the chamber with a swarm of angry echoes. Through the doorways marched three novitiates, young men garbed in golden cloth, each carrying a metal frame hung with bells. Behind them followed 24 men and women, not one of whom possessed a full set of limbs. Unlike their predecessors, the cripples wore robes of dark leather, tailored to match their individual infirmities. And last of all, six oiled slaves carried in a bier, upon which, propped upright, rested an armless, legless, toothless, seemingly sexless figure, the High Priest of Helgrind. From its head rose a 3-foot-high crest, which only made the creature appear even more misshapen. The priests and novitiates positioned themselves around the edge of the patterned disc on the floor, while the slaves gently lowered the bier onto the altar at the head of the room. Then the three perfect, handsome young men shook the bells once more, creating a discordant crash, and the leather-clad priests chanted a short phrase so quickly that Aragorn was not sure what they said, though it had the sound of ritual. Amongst the crush of words, he caught the names of the three peaks of Helgrind, Gorm, Ilda, and Fel Angvara. The High Priest gazed at him and Arya with eyes like chips of obsidian.
"Welcome to the halls of Tosk," it said, and its withered mouth distorted the words. "Twice now you have invaded our inner sanctums, Dragonrider. You shall not have the opportunity to do so again. Galbatorix would have us spare your lives and send you to Urabane. He believes he can force you to serve him. He dreams of resurrecting the riders and restoring the race of dragons. I say his dreams are folly. You are too dangerous, and we do not want to see the dragons resurgent. It is commonly believed that we worship Helgrind. That is a lie we tell others to conceal the true nature of our religion. It is not Helgrind that we revere. It is the Old Ones who made their lair within, and to whom we sacrificed our flesh and blood. The Razak are our gods, Dragon Rider. The Razak and the Leather Blacker."
Dread crept through Aragorn like a sickness. The High Priest spat at him, and spittle drooled from its slack lower lip.
"There is no torture horrible enough for your crime, Rider. You killed our gods, you and that accursed dragon of yours. For that, you must die."
Aragorn struggled against his bonds and tried to shout through his gag. If he could talk, he could stall for time by telling them what the Razak's last words had been, perhaps, or by threatening them with Saphira's vengeance. But their captors showed no inclination to remove his gag. In a hideous gesture, the High Priest smiled, showing its grey gums.
"You will never escape, Rider. The crystals here were enchanted to trap any who might try to desecrate our temple or steal our treasures, even one such as you. Nor is there anyone to rescue you. Two of your companions are dead, yes, even that meddlesome witch, and Murtagh knows nothing of your presence here. Today is the day of your doom, Aragorn Shade Slayer."
Then the High Priest tilted back its head and uttered a gruesome, gurgling whistle. From the dark doorway to the left of the altar, there appeared 4 bare-chested slaves. On their shoulders they bore a platform with 2 large, shallow, cup-like protrusions in the middle. Within the protrusions lay a pair of oval objects, each about 1.5 feet long and 1/2 foot thick. The objects were blue-black and pitted like sandstone. Time seemed to slow for Aragorn.
"They can't be," he thought.
Saphira's egg had been smooth, however, and veined like marble. Whatever these objects were, they were not dragon eggs. The alternatives frightened him even more.
since you killed the old ones," said the High Priest, "it is only fitting that you provide the food for their rebirth. You do not deserve such a great honour, but it will please the old ones, and in all things we strive to satisfy their desires. We are their faithful servants, and they are masters, cruel and implacable. The three-faced God, the hunters of men, the eaters of flesh, and the drinkers of blood. To them we offer up our bodies in hope of revelation into the mysteries of this life, and in hope of absolution for our transgressions. As Tosk wrote, so shall it be."
In unison, the leather-clad priests repeated,
"As Tosk wrote, so shall it be."
The High Priest nodded.
"The old ones have always nested on Hellgrind, but in the time of my grandfather's father, Galbatorix stole their eggs and killed their young, and he forced them to swear fealty to him, lest he eradicate their line entirely. He hollowed out the caves and tunnels they have used ever since. And to us, to their devoted acolytes, he gave charge of their eggs, to watch and to hold and to care for until they were needed. This we have done, and none may fault us for our service. But we pray that some day Galbatorix shall be overthrown, for none should bind the old ones to their will. It is an abomination."
The deformed creature licked its lips, and to his disgust, Aragorn saw that part of its tongue was missing, carved away by a knife.
"You too, we wish gone, Rider. The dragons were the old ones' greatest enemies. Without them, and without Galbatorix, there would be no one to stop the old ones from feasting where and how they will."
As the High Priest spoke, the four slaves bearing the platform walked forth, and carefully lowered it from their shoulders onto the patterned disc, setting it down several paces in front of Aragorn and Arya. Once they finished, they bowed their heads and retreated through the doorway from which they had come.
"Who could ask for anything more than to feed a god with the marrow of their bones?" asked the High Priest. "Rejoice, both of you, for today you receive the blessing of the old ones, and by your sacrifice the record of your sins shall be washed clean, and you shall enter the afterlife as pure as a newly born child."
Then the High Priest and its followers raised their faces toward the ceiling and began to intone a strange, oddly accented song that Aragorn had trouble understanding. He wondered if it was in the dialect of Tosk. At times he heard what he thought were words in the ancient language, mangled and misused, but still the ancient language. When the grotesque congregation finished, ending with another chorus of, "As Tosk wrote, so shall it be," the three novitiates shook the bells in an ecstasy of religious fervour, and the resulting clamour seemed loud enough to bring down the ceiling. Still shaking the bells, the novitiates filed out of the room. The 24 lesser priests departed next, and then, bringing up the rear of the procession, their limbless master, transported upon its bier by the 6 oiled slaves. The door closed behind them with an ominous boom, and Aragorn heard a heavy bar fall into place on the other side. He turned to look at Arya. The expression in her eyes was that of despair, and he knew she had no more idea of how to escape than he did. He gazed upward again and pulled on the chain that held him, using as much of his strength as he dared. The sores on his wrists again tore open, and they sprinkled him with drops of blood. In front of them, the leftmost egg began to rock back and forth ever so slightly, and from it came a faint tapping, like the rapping of a tiny hammer. A profound sense of horror suffused Aragorn. Of all the ways he could imagine dying, being eaten alive by a Razak was by far the worst. He yanked on the chain with renewed determination, biting his gag to help him withstand the agony in his arms. The resulting pain caused his vision to flicker. Next to him, Arya thrashed and twisted as well, both of them fighting in deadly silence to free themselves. And still the tap-tap-tapping continued on the blue-black shell.
"It's no use,"
Aragorn realized. The chain would not give. As soon as he accepted the fact, it became obvious that it would be impossible to avoid being hurt far worse than he already was. The only question was whether his injuries would be forced upon him, or whether they would be of his own choosing. "If nothing else, I have to save Arya." He studied the iron bands around his wrists. "If I can break my thumbs, I might be able to pull my hands out. Then at least I could fight. Maybe I could grab a piece of the Razak shell and use it as a knife. With something to cut, he could free his legs as well, though the thought was so terrifying he ignored it for the time being. All I would have to do is crawl out of the circle of stones. He would be able to use magic then, and he could stop the pain and the bleeding. What he was considering would only take a few minutes, but he knew they would be the longest minutes of his life. He drew in a breath in preparation. "Left hand first." Before he could start, Arya screamed. He spun toward her and uttered a wordless exclamation as he saw the mangled fingers of her right hand. Her skin was pushed up like a glove toward her nails, and the white of bone showed amid crimson muscle. Arya sagged and appeared to lose consciousness for a moment. Then she recovered and pulled on her arm once more. Aragorn cried out with her as her hand slid through the metal cuff, tearing off skin and flesh. Her arm fell to her side, hiding the hand from his sight, though he could see the blood splattering on the floor by her feet. Tears blurred his eyes, and he shouted her name into his gag, but she seemed not to hear him. As she braced herself to repeat the process, the door to the right of the altar opened, and one of the golden-robed novitiates slipped into the chamber. Seeing him, Arya hesitated, though Aragorn knew she would pull her other hand out of the manacle at the slightest hint of danger. The young man looked askance at Arya, then cautiously made his way to the center of the patterned disc, casting apprehensive glances at the egg that was rocking back and forth. The youth was slight, with large eyes and delicate features. It seemed obvious to Aragorn that he had been chosen for his position because of his appearance.
"Here," whispered the youth, "I brought these."
From within his robes he produced a file, a chisel, and a wooden mallet.
"If I help, you have to take me with you. I can't stand it here any longer. I hate it. It's horrible. Promise you'll take me with you."
Even before he finished speaking, Aragorn was nodding his assent. As the young man started toward him, though, Aragorn growled and motioned with his head in Arya's direction. It took a few seconds before the novitiate understood.
"Oh, yes," murmured the young man, and went over to Arya instead.
Aragorn ground his teeth through the gag in anger over the youth's slowness. The harsh scrape of the file soon drowned out the tapping from within the wobbling egg. Aragorn watched as best he could while their would-be rescuer sawed on a section of chain above Arya's left hand.
"Keep the file on the same link, you fool!"
Aragorn raged. The novitiate looked as if he had never used a file before, and Aragorn doubted that the youth had the strength or endurance to cut through even a small amount of metal. Arya hung limply while the novitiate worked, her long hair covering her face. She trembled at regular intervals, and the fall of blood from her ruined hand continued unabated. To Aragorn's dismay, the file did not seem to be leaving a mark on the chain. Whatever magics protected the metal, they were too strong for something as simple as a file to overcome. The novitiate huffed, appearing petulant at his lack of progress, He paused and wiped his brow, then frowning, attacked the chain once again, elbows flailing, chest heaving, the sleeves of his robe flapping wildly.
"Don't you realize it's not going to work?"
thought Aragorn.
"Try the chisel on the shackles around her ankles instead."
The young man continued as he was. A sharp crack echoed through the chamber, and Aragorn saw a thin fissure appear at the top of the dark, pitted egg. The fissure lengthened, and a web of hairline fractures spread outward from it. Then the second egg began to wobble as well, and from it came another tap-tap-tapping, which joined with the first to form a maddening rhythm. The novitiate went pale, then dropped the phial, and backed away from Arya, shaking his head.
"I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It's too late."
His face crumpled, and tears rolled from his eyes.
"I'm sorry."
Aragorn's alarm increased as the young man pulled a dagger from within his robes.
"There's nothing else I can do," he said, almost as if he were speaking to himself. "Nothing else,"
he sniffed and moved toward Aragorn.
"It's for the best."
As the young man stepped forward, Aragorn wrenched at his bonds, trying to pull one of his hands out of the manacles. The iron cuffs were too tight, however, and all he succeeded in doing was scraping more skin off his wrists.
"I'm sorry,"
whispered the young man, as he stopped in front of Aragorn and drew back the dagger.
"No!"
Aragorn shouted in his mind. A chunk of glittering amethyst hurtled out of the tunnel that had brought Aragorn and Arya to the chamber. It struck the novitiate in the back of the head, and he fell against Aragorn. Aragorn flinched as he felt the edge of the dagger slide across his ribs. Then the young man tumbled to the floor and lay there, unconscious. From within the depths of the tunnel emerged a small, limping figure. Aragorn stared, and as the figure moved into the light, he saw that it was none other than Solemnbaum. Relief swept through Aragorn. The weircat was in his human form, and he was naked except for a ragged loincloth that looked as if it had been torn from the clothes of their attackers. His spiky black hair stood nearly on end, and a feral snarl disfigured his lips. Several cuts covered his forearms. His left ear hung drooping from the side of his head, and a strip of skin was missing from his scalp. He carried a blood-smeared knife. And following a few paces behind the weercat was the herbalist Angela.
Infidels on the Loose.
"What an idiot," proclaimed Angela, as she hurried to the edge of the patterned disc on the floor. She was bleeding from a number of cuts and scratches, and her clothes were stained with even more blood, which Aragorn suspected was not her own. Otherwise, she appeared unharmed. All he had to do was this. And she swung her sword with its transparent blade up and over her head, and brought the pommel down against one of the amethysts that ringed the disc. The crystal shattered with an odd snap, like a shock of static, and the light it emitted flickered and went out. The other crystals maintained their radiance. Without pause, Angela stepped to the next piece of amethyst and broke it as well, then the one after it, and so on. Never in his life had Aragorn been so grateful to see anyone. He alternated between watching the herbalist and watching the cracks widening at the top of the first egg. The Razak had almost pecked its way out, a fact it seemed to be aware of, for it was squeaking and tapping with increased vigour. Between the pieces of shell, Aragorn saw a thick white membrane, and the beaked head of the Razak pushing blindly against it, horrible and monstrous.
"Hurry, hurry,"
Aragorn thought, as a fragment as large as his hand fell from the egg and clattered against the floor, like a plate made of fired clay. The membrane tore, and the young Razak stuck its head out of the egg, revealing its barbed purple tongue as it uttered a triumphant screech. Slime dripped from its carapace, and a fungus-like smell pervaded the chamber. Aragorn tugged at his bonds once more, futile as it was. The Razak screeched again, then struggled to extricate itself from the remainder of the egg. It pulled one clawed arm free, but in the process it unbalanced the egg, which tipped to one side,
spilling a thick, yellowish fluid across the patterned disc. The grotesque hatchling lay on its side for a moment, stunned. Then it stirred and got to its feet, where it stood, swaying and uncertain, clicking to itself like an agitated insect. Aragorn stared, appalled and terrified, but also fascinated. The Razak had a deep, ridged chest that made it look as if its ribs were on the outside of its body, not the inside. The creature's limbs were thin and knobby, like sticks, and its waist was narrower than any human's. Each leg had an extra backward-bending joint, something that Aragorn had never seen before, but which accounted for the Razak's unsettling gait. Its carapace appeared soft and malleable, unlike those of the more mature Razak Aragorn had encountered. No doubt it would harden in time. The Razak tilted its head, its huge, protruding, pupil-less eyes catching the light, and it chittered as if it had just discovered something exciting. Then it took a tentative step toward Arya, and another, and then another, its beak parting as it strained toward the pool of blood by her feet. Aragorn shouted into his gag, hoping to distract the creature, but other than a quick glance, it ignored him.
"No!"
exclaimed Angela, and she broke the last of the crystals. Even as the shards of amethyst skittered across the floor, Solombum leaped toward the Razak. The weercat's form blurred in mid-air, head shrinking, leg shortening, fur sprouting, and he landed on all fours, his body once more that of an animal. The Razak hissed and clawed at Solombum, but the weercat dodged the blow, and faster than the eye could follow, slapped the Razak's head with one of his large, heavy paws. The Razak's neck broke with a crack, and the creature flew across the room and landed in a twisted heap, where it lay twitching for several seconds. Solombum hissed, his one uninjured ear pressed flat against his skull. Then he wriggled out of the loincloth that was still tied around his hips and went over to sit and wait by the other egg.
"What have you done to yourself?"
said Angela as she hurried over to Arya. Arya wearily lifted her head, but she made no attempt to answer. With three swift strokes of her colourless blade, the herbalist sliced through Arya's remaining cuffs as if the tempered metal were no harder than cheese. Arya fell to her knees and doubled over, pressing her injured hand against her stomach. With her other hand, she tore at her gag. The burning in Aragorn's shoulders eased when Angela cut him free, and he was finally able to lower his arms. He pulled the cloth out of his mouth, and in a hoarse voice said,
"We thought you were dead."
"They'll have to try harder than that if they want to kill me. Bunglers, the lot of them."
Still doubled over, Arya began to chant spells of binding and healing. Her words were soft and strained, but she never faltered or misspoke. While she worked to repair the damage to her hand, Aragorn healed the cut on his ribs, as well as the sores on his wrists. Then he motioned at Solombum and said, "Move." The weercat flicked his tail, but did as Aragorn asked. Lifting his right hand, Aragorn said,
"Brisingr!"
A pillar of blue flame erupted around the second egg. The creature inside screamed, a terrible, unearthly sound, more like the screech of tearing metal than the cry of person or beast. Narrowing his eyes against the heat, Aragorn watched with satisfaction as the egg burned.
"And let that be the last of them," he thought.
When the screaming ceased, he extinguished the flame, and it went out from the bottom up. The silence afterward was unexpectedly complete, for Arya had finished her incantations, and all was still. Angela was the first to stir. She went to Solombum and stood over him, murmuring in the ancient language as she mended his ear and other wounds. Aragorn knelt by Arya and put a hand on her shoulder. She looked up at him, then uncurled her body enough to show him her hand. The skin along the lower third of her thumb, as well as along the outer edge of her palm, and across the back of her hand, was shiny and bright red. However, the muscles underneath appeared sound.
"Why didn't you finish healing it?" he asked. "If you're too tired, I can—"
She shook her head.
"I damaged several nerves, and I can't seem to repair them.
I need Blodgarm's help. He is more skilled than I at manipulating flesh.
Can you fight?
If I'm careful.
He tightened his grip on her shoulder for a moment.
What you did? I only did what was logical.
Most people wouldn't have had the strength. I tried, but my hand was too big, see? And he held up his hand against hers. She nodded, then grasped his arm, and slowly got to her feet. Aragorn rose with her, providing her with a steady support.
"We have to find our weapons," he said, "as well as my ring, my belt, and the necklace the dwarves gave me."
Angela frowned.
"Why your belt? Is it enchanted?"
When Aragorn hesitated, unsure whether to tell her the truth, Arya said,
"You would not know the name of its maker, wise one, but during your travels you must surely have heard tell of the Belt of the 12 Stars.
The herbalist's eyes widened.
"That belt? But I thought it was lost over 4 centuries ago, destroyed during the..."
"We recovered it," said Arya flatly.
Aragorn could see that the herbalist longed to ask more questions, but she merely said,
"I see. We can't waste time searching every room in this warren, though. Once the priests realize you've escaped, we'll have the whole pack of them nipping at our heels."
Aragorn motioned toward the novitiate on the floor and said,
"Maybe he can tell us where they took our things."
Dropping into a squat, the herbalist placed 2 fingers against the youth's jugular vein, feeling his pulse. Then she slapped his cheeks and peeled back his eyelids. The novitiate remained slack and motionless. His lack of response seemed to annoy the herbalist.
"One moment," she said, closing her eyes.
A slight frown creased her brow. For a while she was still, then she sprang upward with sudden speed.
"What a self-absorbed little wretch! No wonder his parents sent him to join the priests. I'm surprised they put up with him as long as they did."
"Does he know anything of use?" asked Aragorn.
"Only the path to the surface."
She pointed toward the door to the left of the altar, the same door through which the priests had entered and departed.
"It's amazing that he tried to free you. I suspect it's the first time in his life he's ever done anything of his own accord."
"We have to bring him with us."
Aragorn hated to say it, but duty compelled him.
"I promised we would if he helped us."
"He tried to kill you."
"I gave my word."
Angela sighed and rolled her eyes. To Arya, she said,
"I don't suppose you can convince him otherwise."
Arya shook her head, then hoisted the young man onto her shoulder, without apparent effort.
"I'll carry him," she said.
"In that case," the herbalist said to Aragorn,
"you had best have this, since it seems you and I are to do most of the fighting."
She handed him her short sword, then drew a poniard with a jeweled hilt from within the folds of her dress.
"What is it made of?"
Aragorn asked, as he peered through the transparent blade of the sword, noticing how it caught and reflected the light. The substance reminded him of diamond, but he could not imagine that anyone would make a weapon out of a gemstone. The amount of energy required to keep the stone from breaking with every blow would soon exhaust any normal magician.
"Neither stone nor metal," said the herbalist.
"A word of caution, though. You must take great care when handling it. Never touch the edge, or allow anything you cherish to come near it, else you will regret it. Likewise, never lean the sword against something you might need. Your leg, for example."
Wary, Aragorn held the sword farther away from his body.
"Why?"
"Because," said the herbalist with evident relish, "this is the sharpest blade in all of existence. No other sword or knife or axe can match the keenness of its edge, not even Brisinger. It is the ultimate embodiment of an incision-making instrument. This," she paused for emphasis, "is the archetype of an inclined plane. You'll not find its equal anywhere. It can cut through anything not protected by magic, and many things that are. Try it if you don't believe me."
Aragorn looked around for something to test the sword against. In the end, he strode over to the altar and swung the blade at one corner of the stone slab.
"Not so quickly," cried Angela.
The transparent blade passed through 4 inches of stone as if the granite were no harder than custard, then continued down toward his feet.
Aragorn yelped and jumped back, barely managing to stop his arm before he cut himself. The corner of the altar bounced off the step below, and then tumbled clacking toward the middle of the room. The blade of the sword, Aragorn realized, might very well be diamond after all. It would not need as much protection as he had assumed, since it would rarely meet with any substantial resistance.
"Here," said Angela, "you had better have this as well."
She unbuckled the sword's scabbard and gave it to him.
"It's one of the few things you can't cut with that blade."
It took Aragorn a moment to find his voice after so nearly lopping off his toes.
"Does the sword have a name?"
Angela laughed.
"Of course. In the ancient language, its name is Allbiter, which means exactly what you think. But I prefer to call it Tinkle Death."
"Tinkle Death?"
"Yes, because of the sound the blade makes when you tap it."
She demonstrated with the tip of her fingernail and smiled at the resulting high-pitched note that pierced the darkened chamber like a ray of sunshine.
"Now then, shall we be off?"
Aragorn checked to make sure they were not forgetting anything. Then he nodded, strode to the left-hand door, and opened it as quietly as he could. Through the doorway was a long, broad hallway lit by torches. And standing guard in two smart rows, one along each side of the hallway, were 20 of the black-garbed warriors who had ambushed them earlier. They looked at Aragorn and reached for their weapons. A curse ran through Aragorn's mind, and he sprang forward, intending to attack before the warriors could draw their swords and organize themselves into an effective group. He had only covered a few feet, however, when a flicker of movement appeared next to each man. A soft, shadowy blur, like the motion of a wind-blown pennant, seen at the edge of his vision. Without so much as a single cry, the 20 men stiffened and fell to the floor dead, every last one of them. Alarmed, Aragorn slowed to a stop before he ran into the bodies. Each of the men had been stabbed through an eye, as neat as could be. He turned to ask Arya and Angela if they knew what had happened, but the words died in his throat as he beheld the herbalist. She stood braced against the wall, leaning on her knees and panting heavily. Her skin had gone deathly white, and her hands were shaking. Blood dripped from her poniard. Awe and fear filled Aragorn. Whatever the herbalist had done, it was beyond his understanding.
"Wise one," said Arya,
and she too sounded uncertain.
"How did you manage to do this?"
The herbalist chuckled between breaths, then said,
"I used a trick. I learned from my master Tenga. Ages ago, may a thousand spiders bite his ears and knobbly bits."
"Yes, but how did you do it?" insisted Aragorn.
"A trick like that might be useful in Urabane."
The herbalist chuckled again.
"What is time but motion? And what is motion but heat? And are not heat and energy but different names for the same thing?"
She pushed herself off the wall, walked over to Aragorn, and patted him on the cheek.
"When you understand the implications of that, you'll understand how and what I did. I won't be able to use the spell again today, not without hurting myself, so don't expect me to kill everyone the next time we run into a batch of men."
With some difficulty, Aragorn swallowed his curiosity and nodded. He stripped a tunic and a padded jerkin off one of the fallen men, and after donning the clothes, he led the way down the hall and through the archway at the far end. They encountered no one else in the complex of rooms and corridors thereafter, nor did they find any sign of their stolen possessions. Although Aragorn was glad to avoid notice, the absence of even servants worried him. He hoped that he and his companions had not triggered alarms that had warned the priests of their escape. Unlike the abandoned chambers they had seen before the ambush, those they passed through now were filled with tapestries, furniture, and strange devices made of brass and crystal, the purpose of which Aragorn could not fathom. More than once, a desk or a bookcase tempted him to pause and inspect its contents, but he always resisted the urge. They did not have time to read musty old papers, no matter how intriguing. Angela chose the path they took whenever there was more than one option, but Aragorn remained in the lead, clutching the wire-wrapped hilt of Tinkle Death with a grip so hard his hand began to cramp. Soon enough, they arrived at a passageway ending in a flight of stone steps that narrowed as it rose. Two novitiates stood by the stairs, one on either side, each holding a rack of bells such as Aragorn had seen earlier. He ran at the two young men and managed to stab one novitiate through the neck before he could shout or ring his bells. The other, however, had time to do both before Solombum leaped on him and bore him to the ground, tearing at his face, and the whole of the passageway rang with the clamour. "Hurry!" Aragorn cried as he bounded up the stairs. At the top of the steps was a freestanding wall some 10 feet wide, covered with ornate scrollwork and carvings that seemed vaguely familiar to Aragorn. He dodged around the wall and came out into a beam of rose-tinted light of such intensity that he faltered, confused. He lifted Tinkledeath's scabbard to shade his eyes. Not 5 feet in front of him, the High Priest sat on its bier, blood dripping from a cut on its shoulder. Another of the priests, a woman missing both her hands, sat kneeling by the side of the bier, catching the fall of blood in a golden chalice that she held clamped between her forearms. Both she and the High Priest stared at Aragorn with astonishment. Then Aragorn looked past them and saw, as if in a series of lightning flashes, massive ribbed columns rising toward a vaulted ceiling that vanished into shadow. Stained glass windows set within towering walls, the windows on the left burning with light from the rising sun, those on the right dull and flat, lifeless. Pale statues standing between the windows. Rows of granite pews dappled with different colours, extending all the way to the far-off entrance to the nave. And filling the first four rows, a flock of leather-garbed priests, their faces upturned, and their mouths opened in song, like so many hatchlings begging for food. He was, Aragorn belatedly realized, standing in the great cathedral of Drasleona, on the other side of the altar he had once knelt before in reverence, long ago. The handless woman dropped the chalice and stood, throwing her arms out wide as she shielded the High Priest with her body. Behind her, Aragorn glimpsed the blue of Brisinga's sheath lying near the leading edge of the bier, and he thought he saw Arryn next to it. Before he could chase after his sword, two guards rushed toward him from either side of the altar, slashing at him with engraved, red-tasseled pikes. He sidestepped the first guard and sliced the shaft of the man's pike in half, sending the blade flying through the air. Then Aragorn sliced the man himself in half. Tinkledeath passed through his flesh and bones with shocking ease. Aragorn dispatched the second guard just as quickly, and turned to face a pair approaching from behind. The herbalist joined him, brandishing her poniard, and somewhere off to his left, Solombum growled. Arya hung back from the fighting, still carrying the young man. The spilled blood from the chalice had coated the floor around the altar. The guards slipped in the puddle, and the rear man fell and knocked his companion off his feet. Aragorn shuffled toward them, never lifting his feet off the floor so as to avoid losing his balance, and before the guards could react, he slew them both, taking care to control the herbalist's enchanted blade as it effortlessly cut through the two men. As he did, Aragorn was aware that the High Priest was screaming, as if at a great distance.
"Kill the infidels! Kill them! Don't let the blasphemers escape! They must be punished for their crimes against the Old Ones!"
The congregation of priests began to howl and stamp their feet, and Aragorn felt their minds clawing at his like a pack of wolves tearing at a weakened deer. He retreated deep within himself, warding off the attacks with techniques he had been practicing under Glaeda's tutelage. It was difficult to defend himself from so many foes, however, and he feared that he would not be able to maintain his barriers for long. His one advantage was that the panicked, disorganized priests attacked him as individuals, not as a unit. Their combined might would have overwhelmed him. Then Arya's consciousness was pressing against his, a familiar, comforting presence amid the clutch of enemies scrabbling against his inner self. Relieved, he opened himself to her, and they joined their minds, even as he and Saphira would do and for a time their identities merged, and he lost the ability to determine where many of their shared thoughts and feelings came from. Together, they stabbed with their minds at one of the priests. The man struggled to evade their grasp like a fish wriggling through their fingers, but they tightened their grip and refused to let him escape. He was reciting a stilted, oddly worded phrase in an attempt to keep them out of his consciousness. Aragorn assumed it was a scrap of scripture from the Book of Tosk. The priest lacked discipline, however, and his concentration soon wavered as he thought,
"The infidels are too close to master. We have to kill them before... Wait! No! No!"
Aragorn and Arya seized upon the priest's weakness and quickly subjugated the man's thoughts to their will. Once they were certain he could not retaliate against them with mind or body, Arya cast a spell that, from examining the priest's memories, she knew could slip past his wards. In the third row of pews, a man screamed and burst into flame, green fire pouring from his ears, mouth, and eyes. The flames ignited the clothes of several priests close to him, and the burning men and women began to thrash and run about wildly, further disrupting the attacks against Aragorn. The rippling flames sounded like branches snapping in a storm. The herbalist ran down from the altar and moved among the priests, stabbing here and there. Solombum followed close at her heels, finishing off those she felled. After that, it was easy for Aragorn and Arya to invade and seize control of their enemies' minds. Continuing to work together, they killed four more priests, at which point the rest of the congregation broke and scattered. Some fled through the vestibule that Aragorn remembered led to the priory next to the cathedral, while others crouched behind the pews and wrapped their arms around their heads. Six of the priests, however, neither fled nor hid, but rather charged Aragorn, brandishing curved knives with what hands they still possessed. Aragorn cut at the first priest before she could strike at him. To his annoyance, the woman was protected by a ward that stopped Tinkledeath, half a foot from her neck, causing the sword to turn in his hand and a shock to run up his arm. With his left hand, Aragorn swung at the woman. For whatever reason, the spell did not stop his fist, and he felt the bones in her chest give way as he knocked her sprawling into the people behind her. The remaining priests extricated themselves and resumed their charge. Stepping forward, Aragorn blocked a clumsy slash from the foremost priest. Then, with a shout of, "Ha!" he drove his fist into the man's gut and sent him flying into a pew, which the priest struck with a nasty crack. Aragorn killed the next man in a similar manner. A green and yellow dart buried itself in the throat of the priest to his right, and there was a tawny blur as Solombum leaped past him and tackled another of the group. That left but one of Tosk's followers standing before him. With her free hand, Arya grabbed the woman by the front of her leather robes and threw her screaming 30 feet over the pews. Four novitiates had lifted up the high priest's spear and were carrying it at a quick trot along the east side of the cathedral as they headed toward the front entrance of the building. Seeing them escaping, Aragorn uttered a roar and bounded onto the altar, knocking a plate and goblet to the floor. From there, he jumped out over the bodies of the fallen priests. He landed lightly in the aisle and sprinted to the end of the cathedral, heading off the novitiates. The four young men stopped when they saw Aragorn arrive at the doors.
"Turn around!" shrieked the high priest. "Turn around!"
Its servants obeyed, only to be confronted by Arya standing behind them, one of their own slung over her right shoulder. The novitiates yelped and turned sideways, darting between two rows of pews. Before they had gone more than a few feet, Solombum stepped around the end of the pews and began to pad toward them. The weercat's ears were pressed flat against his skull, and the constant low rumble of his growl made Aragorn's neck prickle. Close behind him came Angela, striding down the cathedral from the altar, her poniard in one hand and a green and yellow dart in the other. Aragorn wondered how many weapons she had about herself. To their credit, the novitiates did not lose their courage or abandon their master. Instead, the four shouted and ran even faster at Solombum, presumably because the weercat was the smallest and the closest of their opponents, and because they believed he would be the easiest to overcome. They were mistaken. In a single lithe movement, Solemnbum crouched, jumped from the floor to the top of a pew. Then, without stopping, he leaped toward one of the two lead novitiates. As the weercat sailed through the air, the high priest shouted something in the ancient language. Aragorn did not recognize the word, but the sound of it was unmistakably that of the elves' native language. Whatever the spell was, it seemed to have no effect on Solemnbum, although Aragorn saw Angela stumble as if she had been struck. Solemnbum collided with the novitiate at whom he had flung himself, and the young man tumbled to the floor, screaming, as Solemnbum mauled him. The rest of the novitiates tripped over their companion's body, and the lot of them fell in a tangled heap, spilling the high priest off its bier and onto one of the pews, where the creature lay squirming like a maggot. Aragorn caught up with them a second later, and with three swift strokes he slew all of the novitiates, save the one whose neck Solemnbum had clamped between his jaws. Once Aragorn was sure the men were dead, he turned to strike down the high priest once and for all. As he started toward the limbless figure, another mind invaded his, probing and grasping at the most intimate parts of his self, seeking to control his thoughts. The vicious attack forced Aragorn to stop and concentrate on defending himself from the intruder. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw that Arya and Solemnbum also appeared immobilized. The herbalist was the sole exception. She paused for a moment when the attack commenced, but then she continued to walk with slow, shuffling steps toward Aragorn. The High Priest stared at Aragorn, its deep-set, dark-ringed eyes burning with hate and fury. If the creature had had arms and legs, Aragorn was convinced that it would have tried to tear out his heart with its bare hands. As it was, the malevolence of its gaze was so intense, Aragorn half expected the priest to wiggle off the pew and start biting at his ankles. The assault on his mind intensified as Angela drew near. The High Priest, for it had to be the High Priest who was responsible, was far more skilled than any of its underlings. To engage in mental combat with four different people at once, and to present a credible threat to each of the four, was a remarkable feat, especially when the enemies were an elf, a dragon rider, a witch, and a weercat. The High Priest had one of the most formidable minds Aragorn had ever encountered. If not for the help of his companions, Aragorn suspected that he would have succumbed to the creature's onslaughts. The priest did things the likes of which Aragorn had never experienced before, such as binding Aragorn's stray thoughts to Arya's and Solemnbum's, wrapping them into a knot of such confusion that for brief moments Aragorn lost track of his own identity. At last, Angela turned into the space between the pews. She picked her way around Solemnbum, who crouched next to the novitiate he had killed, every hair on his body standing on end, and then carefully made her way over the corpses of the three novitiates Aragorn had slain. As she approached, the High Priest began to thrash like a hooked fish in an attempt to push itself farther up the pew. At the same time, the pressure on Aragorn's mind lessened, although not enough for him to risk moving. The herbalist stopped when she reached the High Priest, and the High Priest surprised Aragorn by giving up its struggle and lying panting on the seat of the bench. For a minute, the hollow-eyed creature and the short, stern-faced woman glared at each other, an invisible battle of wills taking place between them. Then the High Priest flinched, and a smile appeared on Angela's lips. She dropped her poniard, and from within her dress drew forth a tiny dagger with a blade the color of a ruddy sunset. Leaning over the High Priest, she whispered ever so faintly, "You ought to know my name, Tongueless One. If you had, you never would have dared oppose us. Here, let me tell it to you." Her voice dropped even lower then, too low for Aragorn to hear, but as she spoke, the High Priest blanched, and its puckered mouth opened, forming a round black oval, and an unearthly howl emanated from its throat, and the whole of the cathedral rang with the creature's baying.
"Oh, be quiet," exclaimed the herbalist,
and she buried her sunset-coloured dagger in the centre of the high priest's chest. The blade flashed white-hot and vanished with a sound like a far-off thunderclap. The area around the wound glowed like burning wood. Then skin and flesh began to disintegrate into a fine, dark soot that poured into the high priest's chest. With a choked gargle, the creature's howl ceased as abruptly as it had begun. The spell quickly devoured the rest of the high priest, reducing its body to a pile of black powder, the shape of which matched the outline of the priest's head and torso.
"And good riddance," said Angela, with a firm nod.
The tolling of the bell. Aragorn shook himself, as if waking from a bad dream. Now that he no longer had to fight off the high priest, he gradually became aware that the priory bell was tolling, a loud, insistent sound that reminded him of when the Razak had chased him from the cathedral during his first visit to Drasleona with Brom. "Murtagh and Thorn will be here soon," he thought. "We have to leave before then." He sheathed Tinkledeath and handed it to Angela. "Here," he said, "I think you'll want this." Then he pulled the corpses of the novitiates aside until he uncovered Brisinga. As his hand closed around the hilt, a sense of relief swept through him. Though the herbalist's sword was a good and dangerous blade, it was not his weapon. Without Brisinga, he felt exposed, vulnerable, the same as he did whenever he and Saphira were apart. It took him another few moments of searching to find his ring, which had rolled under one of the pews, and his necklace, which was wrapped around one of the handles of the bier. Among the pile of bodies, he also discovered Arya's sword, which he was pleased to recover. But of his belt, the belt of Beloth the Wise, there was no sign. Aragorn looked under all the nearby pews, and he even ran back to the altar and inspected the area around it.
"It's not here,"
he finally said, despairing. He turned toward the freestanding wall that hid the entrance to the underground chambers.
"They must have left it in the tunnels."
He cast his gaze in the direction of the priory.
"Or maybe..."
He hesitated, torn between the two options. Muttering the words under his breath, he cast a spell designed to find and lead him to the belt. But the only result he received was an image of smooth, grey emptiness. As he had feared, there were wards around the belt that protected it from magical observation or interference, just as similar wards protected Brisinga. Aragorn scowled and took a half-step toward the freestanding wall. The bell tolled louder than ever.
"Aragorn,"
called Arya from the other end of the cathedral, shifting the unconscious novitiate from one shoulder to the other.
"We have to go. But Oromis would understand. It's not your fault. But leave it. The belt has been lost before. We will find it again. But for now we must fly. Hurry."
Aragorn cursed, spun around, and ran to join Arya, Angela, and Solumbum at the front of the cathedral.
Of all the things to lose!
It seemed almost sacrilegious to abandon the belt when so many creatures had died to fill it with energy. Besides, he had a horrible feeling that he might have need of that energy before the day was out. Even as he and the herbalist pushed open the heavy doors that led out of the cathedral, Aragorn sent his mind questing for Saphira, who he knew would be circling high above the city, waiting for him to contact her. The time for discretion had long since passed, and Aragorn no longer cared if Murtagh or some other magician sensed his presence. He soon felt the familiar touch of Saphira's consciousness. As their thoughts melded together once again, a certain tightness in Aragorn's chest vanished.
"What took you so long?"
exclaimed Saphira. He could taste her worry, and he knew she had been considering descending upon Drasleona and tearing it to pieces in search of him. He poured his memories into her, sharing everything that had happened to him since they parted. The process took a few seconds,